Next case for argument, Huppert v. Potter. Mr. Huppert.
Good morning. My name is Joshua Huppert. I'm the plaintiff appellant. I worked for the Postal Service as a letter carrier in the post office in Glenview, Illinois. And I was injured on the job, and by the year 2000, I had a number of medical restrictions on file with the post office. What I claim in my case is that the agency discriminated against me because of my disabilities, both actual disabilities and perceived disabilities. And I responded to the discrimination by filing grievances, which I described the harassment and discrimination and the comments about my disabilities and so forth. The agency responded to my grievances by increasing the harassment, including trumped-up disciplinary actions. They issued suspensions and a notice of removal that the agency now admits was based on a fabricated charge. And the constant day-to-day harassment within 6-8 months after this started, I was diagnosed with psychiatric problems as a result of the harassment, and then after about 9 months, I couldn't take it at all, and I left the job. So I was forced out of the job. There are a lot of disputed issues, and I would like to say a couple things. There's a question of whether I was regarded as disabled. And my strongest single piece of evidence is a written statement from my supervisor, Supervisor Dwill, where he said, quote, "Mr. Huppert has a medical history which supports his inability to perform the duties of a letter carrier," unquote. Well, the agency says that doesn't mean that he thought I was disabled, because actually they point out later on in the same statement, he said, quote, "There are other jobs in the post office available to him that would be less taxing." So they're saying he thought I was only unable to do one particular job. But there are some problems. First of all, he doesn't say what these jobs are. And I happen to know because I was there. There were no such jobs, and he knew it. But there's a question about his credibility. Just because he says that there were these jobs doesn't mean he really believed it. But there's also, even if a jury believed that he really thought there were other jobs I was able to do, we don't know whether those jobs are in the same class of jobs as letter carrier. And common sense would say they're not, because, you know, he says they would be less taxing. Well, if he would claim that he thought there was a desk job answering the phone available, that wouldn't be in the same class of jobs as a letter carrier. If he was talking about a job involving delivery, manual labor, handling mail, mail goes up to 70 pounds. You know, if it was in the same class, it wouldn't be less taxing. If it was less taxing, it wouldn't be in the same class. And he didn't say. So there's a disputed issue of fact as to whether I was regarded as disabled. There was also, there's a retaliation claim and the question whether they retaliated against me for filing the grievances. And the district court found that the grievances were protected activity because this complaint of the discrimination. But the district court said that the actions that management took against me didn't rise to the level of what's prohibited by law. And I had cited, at that point, I had an attorney, and he had cited the case of Burlington versus Sheila White, which was at that point a very new case from the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said that any action that would, I believe they said it would tend to dissuade a reasonable worker from making a complaint of discrimination, any such action was illegal. It's actually, even just going by what the Postal Service admitted, you know, he fabricated charges, he issued notices of suspension, he issued a notice of removal. And in the disputed facts, the supervisor threatened to shoot me. You know, I provided transcripts of recorded conversations, which he made various threats. A reasonable worker could very well think that if, you know, if I make a complaint of discrimination, supervisor's going to threaten to shoot me, he's going to try to suspend me, he's going to try to fire me, he's going to make my job a living hell as long as he can, I think a reasonable worker could very easily say, I better not make that complaint of discrimination. The district court didn't even mention Burlington versus White, and I'm not sure why. He did mention Burlington versus Eller, and I thought maybe there was Eller, but maybe there was some confusion between those cases. I also want to say, you know, on the question of whether I was actually disabled, not just regarded as disabled, you know, we've each cited, each side has cases, and they're different, and I think the law is pretty well established. It's supposed to be an individualized case-by-case determination of whether you're disabled. You know, the Congress in the Rehabilitation Act or the ADA, they didn't say 25 pounds lifting is disabled or 22 or 6 or anything. And I assume that they knew they could do that if they wanted, or the EEOC regulations could have done that, but they didn't. The only hard number is what the Supreme Court relied on in Sutton versus United Airlines, which is in the ADA of 1990, the Congress found that there were 43 million disabled Americans at that point, which if they were using the 1990 census, that's over 17% of the population. So as far as where the bar is, I mean, for example, I it's undisputed I can't twist to the left. It's undisputed in this case twisting is a major life activity. How high do you set the bar to be substantially limited? Well, it should be somewhere around that 17% of the people would be disabled. And I'm sure the post office would like, you know, 1% of the people to be disabled. But that's not what the Congress said. Actually, I think I've said everything. If you don't have questions, I'd wait for the rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hopper.
Thank you.
Ms. Laser?
May it please the court, Mr. Huppert. Your Honors, this case is about a poor performer who would not follow the instructions of his supervisor and who both parties agree required from 30 minutes to 3 hours or more auxiliary help. That's another letter carrier assigned to finish his route on most days. And the employer here is the post office, whose mission is efficiency. Significantly, both parties also agree that the reason that Mr. Huppert required the extra time was not because of his medical limitations. Mr. Huppert, like many workers at the post office who have been injured on the job, has some medical restrictions with which the post office has honored, but they do not come close to being disabilities. And without a disability, Mr. Huppert cannot succeed on his Rehabilitation Act claim for hostile work environment discrimination, constructive discharge. He claims that he has physical disabilities. He claims he's disabled at walking and standing, but he can walk and stand for up to 30 to 40 minutes at a time, and then he just needs to change position or rest for a few minutes and he can go on. The law is clear that that is not a disability. He claims he has a sitting disability. When he drives for more than an hour, his back hurts. If that isn't nearly universal, it is certainly not a disability. He claims that after a day of working as a letter carrier delivering the mail, it hurts his back to drive even a little. That is not a disability after a day of working all day as a letter carrier. He claims he's...
But don't many letter carriers commute to and from work? They can't all be unable to drive home.
No, and Mr. Huppert wasn't unable to drive home. There's no allegation of that.
It just, every letter carrier has a sore back when he drives home at the end of the day?
The record doesn't show whether every letter carrier, but having a sore back at the end of the day, we would argue, is not a disability at sitting. Driving actually has been held not to be a major life activity, and Mr. Huppert doesn't assert that he's disabled at driving.
It would be a strange conception of the post office if all of the letter carriers have bad backs. That would suggest the mail bags were too heavy or something, wouldn't it? It just seems very odd. You don't have jobs structured so that at the end of every day, every one of your workers has a sore back, right?
Mr. Huppert asked for a restriction of 20 pounds, that he carry no more than 20 pounds, and he was given the restriction. He does not claim that he asked for anything, any medical restriction that, you know, that they honor any medical restriction that was not honored. That what I'm discussing is whether any of these medical problems he had rose to the level of a disability under the law of this court. His lifting restriction, as Your Honor suggested in an opinion of this court, a 10-pound lifting restriction is probably not a major life activity. What you said was that people with back injuries are legion, and you doubted that whether a 10-pound lifting restriction was a substantial limitation of a major life activity. Mr. Huppert has double that amount. He can grocery shop, he can carry the groceries in, and he has not shown that he is substantially limited in the major life activity of lifting. Twisting, claims that it hurts him to twist to the left. About at least 15 years ago, he discovered that, and so he avoids it. He plays in a klezmer band where he stands up and plays the violin and moves around. He claims he hasn't missed a day of work in at least 4 years because of his twisting disability. The post office honored his restriction by facing his case so he didn't have to twist to the left, by removing a portion of his route that required him to deliver mail from the car, which would cause him to twist to the left. His twisting has not substantially limited him in any major life activity. He has not discussed his mental disability, his allegation of a mental disability. I think the briefs are clear that there was knowledge by the alleged discriminators only of work-related stress, and at the very most, anxiety, depression, and insomnia caused by work-related stress. This court has held more than once that anxiety and depression caused by problems with a supervisor, by work-related stress, is not a disability. In fact, this court has held that severe depression for 8 weeks missing the job is not necessarily a disability because it wasn't sufficiently prolonged. I want to get to the retaliation allegations. It sounds very serious when Mr. Huppert says his supervisor threatened to shoot him. His supervisor walked into a restaurant with two other letter carriers because Mr. Huppert had asked for more time. This is in Mr. Dweil's deposition, which is Exhibit 3 to the plaintiff's submissions, for more time he had asked for auxiliary help. He wanted Mr. Huppert to go out to the truck and get the mail so he could give it to the other carriers. Mr. Huppert refused, and as Mr. Dweil, the allegation is, which we admitted for purpose of summary judgment, was walking out of the restaurant, he turned and made a finger gesture, pow, I gotcha. I think that we have to assume that the reasonable person would not consider that a serious, like a threat to shoot. But the retaliation claim fails for another reason. There are two claims. One is an EEO retaliation claim. That really was not contested on appeal. The two supervisors didn't know about the EEO claim, and there was no argument about that on appeal. The union grievance claim that he filed a whole bunch of union grievances failed for two reasons. Number one, they did not the union grievances did not complain of disability discrimination. If the grievances don't complain of discrimination, of actionable discrimination, then it's not a retaliation claim. There are a whole bunch of grievances, and I've gone through them more times than I like to say, and the only mention of his medical condition at all is the very first time the supervisor was told by Mr. Huppert of his medical restrictions. He said to him, did you get a letter from your doctor every 30 days? Because that's what you have to do for temporary medical conditions. It turns out Mr. Huppert's condition was permanent, so he didn't wind up having to do that. And that was when Mr. Dweil said, you know, if you can't do this, there are other jobs you can do. The regarded as, the law is clear that if a supervisor regards you as unable to do one job, that is not regarded as being disabled at working. And Mr. Dweil specifically said that there were other jobs he could do. Mr. Huppert, in his reply brief, cites himself to the fact that Mr. Dweil said he could be a clerk at Palatine. Just because it's not being a letter carrier, it's still working for the post office, and it certainly counts as a job he can do. Mr. Huppert admitted in his deposition that there were other jobs at the post office that he could do. Let's see. The other thing is that, as the district court found, there was not an adverse action for retaliation. So not only didn't... So for a retaliation claim, you have to have engaged in protected activity. He didn't do that because he didn't complain of disability discrimination. The fact that he mentioned that his supervisor made him stand up that one day when he first told him and said he had to get letters every 30 days is not disability discrimination. And that was the only mention of his condition. What he claims are adverse actions are ordering him to stand while sorting the mail that first day. That can't be an adverse action. He hadn't filed a grievance yet. Ordering him to finger mail when walking in ice and snow, that is not a materially adverse action. Postal workers are supposed to finger mail. I see my time is up. None of the actions he describes as retaliation constitutes a materially adverse action.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Laser. Mr. Huppert, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
Thank you. I think almost everything that Ms. Laser has talked about are factual issues that are disputed. And, you know, this isn't a trial, and I don't have time to prove
what kind of... Are you working now?
No, not since 2001.
Oh, you're not employed? No.
I'm not. You know, this allegation that I was a poor performer, I think I discussed that in the brief, but I would like to read quickly something from the Postal Service's response to my statement of additional material facts. At page 2, the fact that I claim Dweil issued special orders and instructions that applied only to Huppert and not to other letter carriers, such as orders to pull the mail for his route backwards, to line up small parcels on the street instead of in the office, to combine two relays into one relay, etc. It goes on. At the end of that paragraph, these instructions made it so that Huppert had to take longer than other letter carriers to case his mail and complete his route. The response from the Postal Service is admit, but only for purposes of summary judgment, to which this fact is immaterial. You know, the orders that the supervisor gave me made my job take longer. And then he used the fact that my job took longer to justify the further harassment. You know, we can't go into all the little detail of the facts, but that's a factual dispute. A jury can decide... did my job take longer because the orders he gave me, or did the orders respond? Well, it's clear, and I think I can prove that to a jury, but I don't think I have time to prove that here. There's this question of whether the grievances are a basis for a retaliation claim. The district court said yes, and actually I'm not clear whether that it's still an issue at this point because of what the district court said or not. The district, if you read the grievances, they do talk about discrimination. It's in the substance of the grievance. The title wasn't complaint of disability discrimination because they were grievances. I had to put it in terms of a violation of the national agreement. But the grievances mentioned, for example, the supervisor giving me a direct order to go to the doctor every 30 days and to do that on my own time outside of work. There is no 30-day rule. There never was, whether it's permanent or temporary. This is something he made up, and it was in reaction to my disability. And later on, when he tried to fire me, this was 2 or 3 days before we had an arbitration hearing scheduled. The first and only time that an arbitration was actually scheduled was, I believe, on June 4th of 2001. On June 1st, the supervisor came out to my route, started harassing me, and then wound up giving me a notice of removal, claiming that I didn't use my turn signal. It's not a coincidence, and I said in the grievance, it's not a coincidence that he did this 3 days before we had an arbitration hearing. Then when the arbitration hearing came, this same supervisor said that he had to go to court that day, and he left work, and the hearing was canceled. So this is all in the grievances. They talked about discrimination and retaliation.
Thank you. Your time has expired, Ms. Hubbard. Thank you. And thank you to Ms. Laser. So you made a good argument, Mr. Hubbard, so... even though you're pro se, so it's fine.